Corporations are avoiding paying billions of dollars in U.S. taxes by moving their operations to new tax havens, like the Swiss town of Zug.
So here we are in Zug.
We went there to visit their operations.
And we came to see your international headquarters.
At the moment, boss is not here, so...
She said her boss wasn't there, and we should call someone halfway around the world.
In Houston?
Yeah.
Not here?
No.
But this is the headquarters.
I know.
And is the CEO here?
No.
Elisa Montanti is unlike almost anyone we've ever met. With the help of some very charitable American doctors, she's changed the lives of more than 100 kids, like this one, a boy from Iraq who needed an arm, a leg, and an eye.
Love you, one.
Tonight, you'll follow his transformation, which is a wonder to watch.
Catch it! Face the basket! Make a play!
He's got to get up closer.
You don't just say screen! My God! Where next?
This is not a story about a tyrannical coach who churns out athletes at some high school sports factory. It's about values, loyalty, and commitment at a small inner-city parochial school that doesn't meet anyone's idea of what a basketball powerhouse should look like.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Bob Simon.
I'm Morley Safer.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
I'm Scott Pelley. Those stories and Andy Rooney tonight on 60 Minutes.
Our government is in knots over ways to lower the federal budget deficit. Well, what if we told you we found a pot of money, over $60 billion a year, that could be used to help out? That bundle is tax money not coming into the IRS from American corporations. One major way they avoid paying the tax man is by parking their profits overseas. They'll tell you they're forced to do that because a 35% corporate tax rate is high in relation to other countries. And indeed, it seems the tax code actually encourages companies to move businesses out of the country. Companies searching out tax havens is nothing new. In the 80s and 90s, there was an exodus to Bermuda and the Cayman Islands, where there are no taxes at all. When President Obama threatened to clamp down on tax dodging, many companies decided to leave the Caribbean. But instead of coming back home, they went to safer havens like Switzerland. Several of these companies came to this tiny dot on the Swiss map called Zug, a small, quaint, medieval town.
I don't think anybody's ever heard of Zug in the United States.
Hans Marti, who heads Zug's economic development office, showed off the nearby snow-covered mountains. But Zug's main selling point isn't a view of the Alps.
How low are the taxes here?
It's something between 15 and 16%.
And in the United States, it's 35%.
I know. It's half price.
And do you have the lowest tax rate in Switzerland?
Most probably, yes.
Most probably, yes. So you're kind of a tax haven within a tax haven.
Maybe, yes.
Yeah.
The population of the town of Zug is 26,000. The number of companies in the area, 30,000 and growing at an average rate of 800 a year, but many are no more than mailboxes. Texas Democratic Congressman Lloyd Doggett questions whether the recent moves of several companies are legit.
A good example is one of my Texas companies that's been in the news lately, Transocean.
Transocean owned the drilling rig involved in the giant BP oil spill. They moved to Zug 2 years ago.
I'm not sure they even moved that much. They have about 1,300 employees still in the Houston area. Mm-hmm. They have 12 or 13 in Switzerland.
And yet they claim they're headquartered over there.
They claim they're Swiss. And they claim they're Swiss for tax purposes. And by doing that, by renouncing their American citizenship, they've saved about $2 billion in taxes.
So here we are in Zug.
We went to find their operations here.
And we came to see your international headquarters.
The moment boss is not here, so...
She said her boss wasn't there, and we should call someone halfway around the world.
In Houston?
Yeah.
Not here?
No.
But this is the headquarters.
I know.
And is the CEO here?
No.
I mean, normally here?
No.
Another Texas company that moved here is Weatherford, a $10 billion oil field services firm. It still has 2,800 workers in Houston. But according to official documents, they are incorporated in Zug in this small building. But there was no Weatherford on the sign outside.
Finally found it listed in this thing, Weatherford International. Here's the mailbox. But we don't know even where to go. There's no listing for the international headquarters of Weatherford.
So we started knocking on doors.
Hi. We're looking for Weatherford. Are they in this building?
Yes.
Here?
Just a moment, please. I have to check it.
Okay. All right.
I was shown to a conference room. They said Weatherford rents for board meetings. But Weatherford's Houston office told us they never go there. So are these big companies pulling a fast one? Well, apparently not. Under both Zug and U.S. tax laws, it's perfectly legal to get the low tax rate even without a real presence here. But Congressman Doggett wants to change that.
You have a proposed legislation that a company will be taxed not based on where they file some pieces of paper, but where their decision makers, their management actually resides and makes decisions.
Let them pay the same way that other Houston-based companies pay. And so if they have their management and control there, they ought to be paying here in the United States. I think it's fair.
We found that faced with the mere threat of Doggett's legislation, Transocean and Weatherford both recently packed up their top brass and shipped them to Geneva.
We were told Transocean's top 10 executives live around here in the Geneva area and work on the top two floors of this building, everyone from the CEO to the chief financial officer to the vice president of taxes.
They wouldn't talk to us on camera, and neither would Weatherford. They also moved their CEO and CFO to Geneva. And so now we're beginning to see a jobs exodus from the U.S. of top management.
We can't write a law that their lawyers can't get around. That's the whole problem here.
You're in Congress. Why did Congress write these laws that allows this to happen?
There's been a lot of arm twisting, a lot of effective lobbying here, and some really smart tax lawyers figuring out how to game the system with one shenanigan after another.
But are they shenanigans or is it the law?
I think it was a shenanigan when some of these companies felt so strongly about America that they renounced their American citizenship and began saluting a foreign flag. They exploited a provision in our tax laws and moved offshore.
Congress tried to put a stop to that with a law passed in 2004 mandating that any company that wanted to move offshore would still have to pay the 35%. But because of loopholes in the tax code, companies can substantially lower their taxes by moving chunks of their businesses to their foreign subsidiaries. I think when people hear that all these companies are moving overseas because of taxes, they think that doesn't smell right.
Yeah, the question is, does a company have a moral obligation to pay its fair share?
Swiss tax attorney Thierry Boitel.
I think many companies in the U.S. would like to keep the jobs in the U.S. if they could. But they also need to keep the shareholders happy. And they are in the U.S. in a corporate tax nightmare because it's the highest tax rate in the world.
With Japan slated to lower its rate in April, the U.S. will soon have the highest corporate tax rate in the developed world.
We are dealing with a tax system that is a dinosaur.
One CEO who would talk to us is John Chambers, head of Cisco, the giant high-tech company headquartered in San Jose. He says our tax rate is insane. It's forcing companies into these maneuvers, especially when many other industrialized countries, including Canada, are busy lowering their tax rates in order to lure our companies and our jobs away.
Every other government in the world have realized that the U.S. has it wrong. They're saying, I'm going to have lower taxes, period. That's what you see across all Western Europe. That's what you see in Asia and the developed countries.
Are you judged as a CEO on things like this, on taxes?
Absolutely.
He's been expanding Cisco overseas because of growing demand abroad, but also to lower the company's taxes. Their average rate over the last 3 years, just 20%. Economist Martin Sullivan says it's standard operating procedure for companies like Cisco.
U.S. multinationals are shifting their research facilities, shifting their manufacturing facilities, and shifting some regional headquarters into Switzerland and into Ireland. And those are massive numbers of jobs.
He says Ireland taxes corporations at just a third of the U.S. rate. So no wonder the outskirts of Dublin look like Silicon Valley. These companies are all but obliged to go abroad.
Well, if you have a 35% rate in the United States and, for example, a 12.5% rate in Ireland, there's an incentive to move your factory to Ireland.
600 American companies are in Ireland, and they employ 100,000 people.
That's right.
Those are jobs that aren't here. And they moved to Ireland because of taxes.
The U.S. Treasury, in effect, is subsidizing investment in Ireland.
Why isn't everybody in Ireland?
Well, almost everybody is in Ireland. All the pharmaceutical companies, all the high-tech companies. You're stupid if you're not in Ireland.
We noticed that you have an awful lot of companies in Ireland.
Yes, we do.
8 companies in Ireland.
We do what makes sense to the shareholders. We go where there are incentives in countries that say, we want you here, we're going to give you tax advantages, we want you to add jobs here, etc. We can no longer in America say, this is how we do it, therefore you must do it. We've got to change and we're going to get left behind.
An increasingly popular way, particularly pharmaceutical and high-tech companies like Google, avoid paying the 35%, is to shift their patents, computer code, pill formulas, even logos from their U.S. bases to their outposts in low-tax countries.
100 years ago, if a company wanted to relocate, you know, you'd have to pick up a factory, machinery, move everything.
Yeah.
Today, a company can move predominantly all of its assets just on paper.
You can push a button and move your algorithms.
Or Coca-Cola could take the recipe out of the vault
and
put it in a Swiss vault.
And then it's Swiss.
When a formula or a computer code is registered abroad, say in Zug, a U.S. company is allowed to claim that a lot of its taxable profits are there, even if most of its sales are in the U.S.
The need for tax reform is greater than ever.
Economist Sullivan told Congress these patents and profit transfers are accounting tricks that allowed companies to chip away at the 35% and save tens of billions of dollars. He says that from 2007 to 2009, these maneuvers helped lower Pfizer's average tax rate to 17%, Merck to 12.5%, and GE just 3.6%.
You know, what's really remarkable as I review the data is the consistency with which you see this phenomenon. The taxes are going down, the profits are shifting offshore at an accelerated rate over the last few years.
So now these companies have profits accumulating overseas in places like Zug.
Oh, look at your clock tower.
If they bring the money home, it's taxed at the full 35%. If they leave it overseas, the IRS can't touch it. In other words, the tax law all but forces companies to keep their money out of the country indefinitely.
We leave the money over there, I create jobs overseas, I acquire companies overseas, I build plants overseas, and I badly want to bring that money back.
How much does your company have overseas that could be brought back?
Almost here? $40 billion. $40 billion.
Cisco has $40 billion trapped over there somewhere.
Yes.
The total amount of money U.S. companies have trapped overseas is $1.2 trillion. Chambers is advocating for a one-time tax break to allow them to bring that money home at a rate of, say, 5%. He says that would stimulate the economy and create jobs.
What is your downside for money that isn't going to come back anyhow? I'd say your downside is zero.
But the Obama administration opposes this idea. When it was tried in 2005, the Treasury did rake in billions of dollars, though very few jobs were created.
What if tomorrow Congress passed a quickie law and the tax rate was 20%? Would that solve everything?
I think it is the most important ingredient that we have to think about being competitive.
You lower the rate from 35% to 20%. You lose something like $2 trillion in taxes. We have a horrible deficit crisis, debt crisis. That's almost too much money to lose. What's your answer to that?
My answer is very simply. Every other developed country in the world has already done this. I'm not asking you to give me a favor or a handout.
You know what? It sounds it.
All we're asking is give us a level playing field. Get us close.
Of all the tragedies of war, none are greater than those that involve children. Caught in the crossfire or hit by a roadside bomb, children are often wounded, but rarely receive the heroic, high-tech medical care that our troops depend on. Recently, we heard about a woman in Staten Island, New York, who has devoted herself to wounded children. Elisa Montanti has little money and no training in humanitarian relief, but against the odds, she has changed the fortunes of more than 100 crippled children, one child at a time. We wanted to see how she does it. So for 4 months, we followed Elisa Montanti on a journey with one child, a 9-year-old from Iraq, a boy named Waad. This is Waad last April, when he arrived in America with his mother, Wafa. Elisa Montanti brought them here after an American soldier told her Waad's story.
He was walking with his friends, and they were kicking a bottle. I think the first child kicked a bottle, and then maybe the second. And then he kicked it, and it exploded.
It was a bomb.
It was a bomb.
The blast shattered his face, tore out his eye, and took away his right arm and left leg. Waad would receive treatment for all of those wounds from a network of volunteers and charities that Elisa Montanti has recruited, one by one, over the last 15 years. Waad's first stop was at the Shriners Hospital in Philadelphia. Shriners has 22 hospitals that provide free care to burned and crippled children.
Oh, you are so strong.
Very good.
Waad pushed through physical therapy to strengthen his muscles.
You're going
to
be Superman.
It's 5 years.
But slowed down long enough.
Wow, he really gets around well.
To get fitted for a new arm and leg that the Shriners made for him. Then it was a trip to see an ocular specialist, Annette Kersrott, who also volunteers for Elisa. A prosthetic eye was the first step in improving Waad's appearance.
Happy?
Happy.
Happy.
But the tougher part would be reconstructing his face.
Waad, how are you, buddy?
That was the challenge for plastic surgeon Kaveh Elisadeh. He's a Long Island volunteer recruited by Elisa.
So there's this increasing pool of people that get drawn into her world. And if you're lucky or unlucky enough to be excited about this stuff, you get pulled in.
Can it blow up your cheeks really
good,
big?
Good, mama.
When you first approach a hospital or a doctor to ask them for potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars in free medical care, what's your pitch? What do you tell them?
I tell them this true story. Here's a child that's battered. I just tell them the reality. I expect them to help. I'm grateful because they don't have to help. But I expect that they would because how could you not?
And you get to feed the
After the earthquake in Haiti, she went to the island and brought back three girls who lost limbs. Elisa's work with crippled children began back in 1996 when a friend asked her to raise money to buy school supplies for kids in war-torn Bosnia. That led to a meeting with the Bosnian ambassador to the UN.
And he said to me, you know, quite frankly, we have much stronger needs right now than pencil cases. He reached in his drawer and he handed me this letter that this boy had written to him asking for help, two new arms and a leg. And I saw his picture, and that's really when my whole life started to change.
She brought that boy to the U.S. for treatment. Kenan Malkich, now 28, helps Elisa run her tiny charity with a mighty name. She calls it the Global Medical Relief Fund.
Global Medical Relief sounds really big.
It's big in the sense that we reach out to the world, but it's small in that it's really me.
Maybe you should call it One Little Lady in Staten Island.
She runs Global Medical Relief out of her home, a 57-year-old single woman with a computer and a phone.
My office is my former walk-in closet, and I added a window, and it works, and I speak to the world right out of my walk-in closet.
The 112 children that you've helped so far come from where?
Bosnia, El Salvador, Liberia, Niger, Sierra Leone, Iraq, China, Indonesia, Pakistan, Haiti. Did I say Nepal?
How do you keep it running?
On a prayer.
She simply begs and borrows from doctors and hospitals, whatever it takes. She's traveled to the Middle East, arranging passports, cutting red tape, and getting wounded children out one at a time. Word spread among soldiers in Iraq that an American charity called Global Medical Relief is a lifeline.
We are working in Mosul.
Now, she gets a dozen emails a month from the war zone, most of which start with, "Dear Sir."
There's so many.
How do these letters end?
Please help.
It was an email like that that started Waad on his journey with Elisa Montanti. And 7 weeks after he arrived, Waad was scheduled for his first surgery to repair his face. He walked into the hospital thanks to his new prosthetic leg.
When you first met Miss Elisa, do you remember what she told you that she would do for you?
Amalia.
He said, they will help me to make surgery and fix my arm, leg.
And make you whole again.
Dr. Elisadeh's goal is to minimize the scar that runs from Waad's scalp down to his chin. The surgery was done at North Shore University Hospital, which donated its facilities.
I love you, Waad.
My plan today is to go ahead and expand the skin surrounding the scar, putting a sophisticated tissue balloon underneath the skin where the skin slowly stretches over time.
That sophisticated tissue balloon implanted under his cheek will be inflated gradually over the course of weeks.
So over time, you're going to stretch his skin out, essentially creating new skin.
That's right.
And then you're going to cut the scars out and move the new skin together.
I hope so. That's the plan.
What's the best you can hope for?
My goal with Waad is that the defects that he has will not be noticeable when he becomes a young man.
And you have a great deal of confidence in that.
I do.
But Waad's appearance would have to become much worse before he had a chance to get better. During his time here, Elisa arranged for Waad to live alongside the three Haitian girls in temporary housing, a Jesuit retreat on Staten Island. Together, they formed a family, kids who didn't speak the same language, helping each other through a painful experience.
Waad is coming around the bend.
Even with all the free care, Elisa spends about $50,000 a year on plane tickets and expenses. She raises it from donors, including Richmond County Savings, a Staten Island bank, but sometimes it's tough going.
How often do you run into people who say, look, those kids are from overseas, and we'd rather donate our money to kids here in the United States?
Often.
It's a big problem for you?
I've gotten hate mail. You know,
hate mail.
Yeah. You know, how can you help children from Iraq when they're going to grow and just hate the United States? You should help the children here.
And to those people, you would say what?
I say we don't have landmines in this country, thank God. And these children are innocent.
Nearly 3 months into Waad's treatment, the kids went to an amusement park. The balloons under Waad's face had been successfully inflated, but remember, we said things would get worse before they got better. This was Waad in June. Imagine what it takes to be a stranger in America and place your faith in a painful procedure you don't understand. Some people need courage for a roller coaster. Waad sat right up front to see what it's like to be a kid again.
Do you want to just bring him to the room, Strength?
Give us a few minutes.
I'll take it.
2 days later came his final surgery.
What? No pain.
No pain.
Over 2 hours, Dr. Elizadeh removed the balloons from under Waad's skin, cut out the scars, and joined the new skin together.
Look at it.
Plastic surgery requires months of healing, and in recovery, Waad had a long way to go.
There you go. Now you can look at Mommy.
But for the first time, his mother began to recognize the face she hadn't seen in more than 2 years.
Happy, be happy, okay?
Sleepy.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Yes, thank you.
I'm curious why you do this.
I do this probably for the most selfish reason, which is that it feels good.
What do you think?
Well, my charity is very personal. It becomes a global family. All these children, I say my children so often because I feel that they are, I love all of them. It's more than just an organization that is giving a child a leg or fixing his face. These children go back as little ambassadors, and they tell their town, their village, who say how wonderful the American people are.
In early August, Waad had one more checkup with Dr. Elizadeh.
Look at this face. He looks so much better. Aren't you handsome? Waad, you look so good.
His scars will continue to fade over time, but this isn't the end of Waad's treatment. The plan is for him to come back from time to time for touch-ups as he grows older.
He's got a smile back. And I think he understands more English than he used to understand.
Yeah.
There you understand a lot of it.
4 months after they arrived in America, Waad and his mother headed home to Iraq.
Hard to say goodbye?
Very hard. I cry all the time.
You must worry that you won't see him again.
I do, because it's always that worry, what if? You know, what if something happens while they're in Iraq? What if I can't do this anymore?
A few weeks later, we checked in on Waad back in his neighborhood in Iraq. That's him in the red shirt. We found the boy who'd been disfigured and left to hop on one leg was back with a smile and a pretty solid kick.
High school basketball is one of the most popular sports in the country, and those who follow it on the national level, particularly college scouts and coaches, are familiar with St. Anthony of Jersey City, New Jersey, and its coach, Bob Hurley. Going into this season, St. Anthony had won 23 state championships and 3 national titles under Hurley, who is one of only 3 high school coaches ever inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. In nearly 40 years at St. Anthony, Hurley has never earned more than a $9,000 annual stipend, passing up lucrative college jobs to change lives in the inner city and to help save a small, struggling Catholic school by putting it on a very big stage.
One night earlier this month, 8,000 people jammed the Rutgers Athletic Center to watch what was technically the North Jersey non-public Class B Finals.
Okay, have a good ball game.
But the game also happened to be for the national championship. It featured the number one ranked St. Patrick of Elizabeth, New Jersey, with the nation's top prospect, Michael Gilchrist, against one of the most storied programs in America. St. Anthony of Jersey City and its legendary coach, Bob Hurley, ranked number 2.
Enjoy yourself. Ready? Everybody in. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Hard work was the mantra as St. Anthony broke the huddle, something they had been doing all year in preparation for this game.
Working a tight handle.
Their practices under Coach Hurley are famous for being among the most intense, grueling workouts in the country at any level of the game. A basketball boot camp unsuited for the uncommitted the politically correct.
Try Josh, get him. Get Candy ass out. Sit down, softy.
It's the only coaching job Bob Hurley's ever had, and lots of things have changed in the 39 years that he's been here.
but he is not one of them. I mean, you really are old school.
For sure. In this day and age, I'm still one of the most demanding people that the kids are going to come across.
Catch it! Face the basket! Make a play!
He's got to get up closer.
You don't just say screen! My God! Where next?
But this is not a story about a tyrannical coach who churns out athletes at some high school sports factory. It's about values, loyalty, and commitment at a small inner-city parochial school that doesn't meet anyone's idea of what a basketball powerhouse should look like.
Come on, Mike. Step slide.
St. Anthony is in an old brick building with no gym in a run-down neighborhood not far from the Jersey side of the Hudson River facing New York. There are only 240 students, most of them from families living below the poverty level, who somehow managed to scrape together the $5,000 tuition. And Sister Felicia, who runs St. Anthony, says the standards are every bit as high as Coach Hurley's.
For the past 17 years, 100% of all of our seniors have been accepted into college. We're proud of that.
That's a pretty remarkable record.
Yes, it is.
But all of this has been under threat for some time now. St. Anthony, like many parochial schools, is deeply in debt and constantly struggling to keep its doors open. It's managed to survive so far for one reason.
I think every school has their own particular talent, and ours obviously is basketball.
And in some ways, St. Anthony is the Juilliard of high school basketball, a place where the gifted and the promising enroll to learn the finer points of positioning, technique, ball movement, and endurance. They are not here to have fun. They're here to get better and to learn how to win from one of the masters.
This is your program. There's no mistake about that.
Yeah, I think my fingerprint is on everything that we do. I've had five NBA first-round picks. I've had about 150 kids play Division I basketball. I think everybody can be better than they think they can be, and I don't let them dictate. I dictate everything.
Mm-hmm. You're very tough and very demanding on these kids.
But I'm dealing with adolescent males. And in order to get them to perform on a regular basis, these group of people, I have to drive them. It is no question I have to drive them. We would never be as good, even the best teams I've had. There has to be times when you know you have to really push the pedal.
You've never given a day's effort in your life. Have you ever had a job?
Hurley is something of an expert on adolescent males. For 28 years, his day job was working as a probation officer. He knows the streets of Jersey City and their temptations as well as anyone, and he makes sure his kids stay on the straight and narrow.
You make the kids sign a contract?
Yes.
When they come here?
Don't know that it's legally binding, but when I have to mete out justice, it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's a legal document. Yeah, it's up to 19, Steve. It's up to 19 things now.
What are some of them?
Alcohol, cigarettes, narcotics is one. Some of them are haircuts, short haircut, no tattoos. Jewelry has to be basic, ring, a watch.
You have drug tests?
I've drug tested entire teams.
Do you have rebels? Do you have people rebel against
us? Yeah, that's why, I think that's why there are hinges on doors, that this is not meant for everybody.
It's meant for bright, talented kids who are committed to earning a college basketball scholarship and competing at the next level.
Move your feet! Move your feet!
Everyone has to try out for the team, and Hurley doesn't do any recruiting. Players or their parents seek him out because of his remarkable record.
All of you come here because of Coach Hurley?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
All of you?
Yes. Yes.
Over the years, they have come from far and wide to attend St. Anthony. This year's longest commute belongs to Jimmy Hall, who wakes up every morning at 6 a.m. in Brooklyn and travels by subway, bus, and train across New York City and the Hudson to Jersey City. A commute that can take an hour and a half each way. His mother, Noreen Wiggins, who raised her son in a single-parent home, thought St. Anthony was exactly what he needed.
It's time for Jimmy to grow up, and Coach Hurley is just a part of the piece that's helping him to mature into a young man.
Is this the most demanding situation he's ever been in?
Yes, by all means, it is. It took a little while for him to really realize that no, Coach Hurley is not trying to kill you, Jimmy. He's really trying to make you be the best player you can be.
Is it worth it?
Yeah, it's worth it. Very much so.
Senior guards Miles Mack, Lucius Jones, and junior forward Kyle Anderson all knew exactly what to expect from Coach Hurley.
He admitted to me today he loses it every now and then.
He pretty much puts the fear in your heart, you know, don't mess up. But one thing that makes me pretty happy is when we see Mrs. Hurley come in. You know, that's when our practice is coming to an end. She's coming to save us.
Hurley's wife, Chris, has been St. Anthony's official scorekeeper for the past 25 years and knows a lot more about basketball than the average fan.
Jordan! Floppy! Keep the pressure on!
Together, the couple raised two of St. Anthony's greatest players, Bobby Hurley Jr., who went on to lead Duke to two national championships, and his younger brother, Danny, who starred at Seton Hall and is now the head coach at Wagner College, where Bobby is his chief assistant.
Did you feel he was harder on you than some of your teammates?
Yes, I think almost everyone on my team would say that my dad went out of his way to be harder on me, just to kind of send the message that there was no favoritism on the team. So it was real, Dad, you got to admit.
I think, you know, the treatment that I received, I think it strengthened the relationships I had with the other players.
They felt sorry for you.
I don't know. I think they felt sorry for themselves some days, too. But, I
mean, they weren't alone.
Yeah, I mean, we were all in it together.
So of all your accomplishments, what are you proudest of?
I've only had two kids in 39 years that have not gone to college. And we're extremely proud of that because we think that we've opened up doors in kids' lives that they didn't know that they could do. Their families certainly didn't know they could do it. And it's because of education, it changes the direction of their life.
There were 23 of them playing college basketball this season, five of them in the NCAA tournament. For Pittsburgh,
Pravon Woodall gets an easy one.
Richmond, Villanova, Kansas, and USC.
Coach Hurley would have been proud of that one out of St. Anthony's.
He could have left St. Anthony for the big time long ago. There have been any number of opportunities to coach at the college level, but he's never been that interested in money or glamour, and each time decided to stay put in Jersey City.
Some people may say I just wasn't very ambitious, but I think my wife and I found that over the years you just found so many kids that were here that when they come into school, you saw something in them, this potential, and you wanted to see it out. And then 4 years would go by, and then there's another kid in there someplace, freshman, sophomore. And then 8 years have gone by, and all of a sudden it's about 20 years in, and then people started talking to me about, you know, coaching at the college level.
Do you regret that you didn't take any of these college offers?
No, absolutely not. But I don't think I'm built for that. I think I'm where I'm supposed to be. I think I'm good with this age, and I'm good with city kids because, you know, I was a city kid.
There are a lot of inducements for people to move on. There's money. There's the challenge of proving yourself at the next level. You weren't interested in either of those things?
No. I always felt that, you know, the challenge here was pretty strong.
Like the small school with no gym and no money and trying to raise the bar each year to maintain the level of success. St. Anthony's financial shortfall is $1.2 million each year, and Hurley is the engine that propels the fundraising effort.
I want to make a contribution to St. Anthony's.
Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
He hits the speaking circuit.
Salary doesn't change a great deal in this particular school.
My knees, right there, foot.
Runs all year basketball clinics, with all the proceeds going to the school.
One, two, three.
Harvard!
Good job. All right.
He's indispensable. And in addition to helping us financially, he's a role model for the kids and a father figure because they know that he has stayed in the city. He hasn't left them. Money was not something that attracted him. He was here to help them, and the kids appreciate that. Families appreciate that.
Would this school be here right now if it wasn't for Bob Hurley?
Probably not.
Sister Felicia and the entire school were at Rutgers for the national championship game a few weeks ago. And it did not begin well for St. Anthony.
Who got this? Relax, guys, relax.
St. Patrick and Michael Gilchrist roasted them in the first half.
Stay in the game! Rocky, be strong with the ball!
It's a long game. Get control here. Keep the pressure on!
But after trailing most of the game, St. Anthony's superior conditioning, poise, and coaching finally turned the tide. They outscored St. Patrick 23-5 in the final quarter and won in a rout. They closed out the season with their 24th state championship and 4th national title. It was the perfect ending for the season and for our story. The players' dreams had been realized and the lessons well learned.
Every 8-second sprint we ran during the season, everything we've done, every day I've busted your chops, every study hall, does it all seem worth it right now? Valuable lesson learned here.
As for Coach Hurley, he's not going anywhere. He's already plotting another championship season.
Uh-oh. Hey, you want another
Sister
one?
Felicia expects him to be around for another 15 years.
Are you going to shoot the ball in the basket?
So he can coach his 20-month-old grandson, Gabe.
Ready?
In fact, shoot. It's already begun.
Yes.
Now, Andy Rooney.
They're always doing studies, and there are a lot of studies, whatever a study is, that suggest that drinking some things that used to be thought to be bad for us are now considered good, and drinks which were thought to be good are now considered bad. Got so you don't dare drink diet soda because researchers say that that can be damaging to your health. Well, I don't pay much attention to any of these alarms because, for that matter, life can be dangerous to your health, particularly in large amounts. Another study I saw says that sweet drinks increase your blood pressure and your chances of getting fat. Well, I'm already overweight, so is it okay if I have a Coke once in a while? 30 years ago, they were saying that people who drank a lot of coffee were more apt to increase their chances of getting cancer. Now a study from Israel says that drinking 3 cups of coffee a day is good for you and good for your circulation. It may even protect you against heart attacks. I've never paid attention to any of the research, and I'm still alive and drinking a lot of coffee. I was in Israel once, and that didn't kill me either. Experts have determined that an occasional glass of red wine may be good for us, so you may catch me with a glass at dinner. My attitude is drink up, because tomorrow they might say it's bad. What I'm really waiting for is a study that says a lot of ice cream lowers your cholesterol. I mean, I'll eat to that.
I'm Morley Safer. We'll be back next week with another edition of 60 Minutes.